Hello and welcome to the 1926 podcast. Today I'm chatting with Stephen Tivani. Stephen will be joining our principal guest conductor, Miriam Burns, as the guest violinist for the January 16th Youngstown Symphony Orchestra concert that will take place at Dior Performing Arts Center at 4 p.m.
In 1926, two organizations were born that would shape the future of performing arts in Youngstown, Ohio. The Little Youngstown Symphony performed its first public concert, starting a legacy that would become the Youngstown Symphony Orchestra. Later that year, the doors to Stambaugh Auditorium opened for the people of Youngstown and surrounding areas. These are the stories, performances, and conversations of artists and supporters of these historic organizations. This is the 1926 podcast.
Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Hi, good.
Good. So thank you so much for agreeing to come on and chat with me for a little bit. So let's start out by talking about how you got your start in music. I know that your family was very musical, so tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so my whole family is very musical. My dad is a doctor, but he plays the piano, and he is always playing the piano. And my mom studied voice and is a voice teacher. So there's always music in my home as long as I can remember, especially because both of my older brothers play string instruments. So they were playing, my oldest brother plays violin, and then other older brother plays cello. So yeah, there was just always music, and we would sing together when I was really young. And then so I always knew I wanted to play an instrument. And when I wanted to play the trumpet, actually.
Oh, okay.
Then when I was about 8 years old, I think I had gotten some braces, and it's a little young to start the trumpet anyway. So I was playing a little bit of piano, but I was planning on playing the trumpet, but then one day I opened up my brother's violin case and I told my mom I wanted to play violin. So she said, we have to start right away, because, you know, it's a little bit late. But yeah, that's how I got started. And yeah, that just kind of kept going ever since then.
Yeah, I can imagine that it would be difficult to play the trumpet with braces. And you said that you were 8 when you picked up the violin?
I was just before I turned 8.
Okay. And your mom thought that was a little on the late side to start playing. So how old were your brothers when they started playing their instruments?
Yeah, my oldest brother was 6, I think, and he had done Suzuki. Mm-hmm. So, and Suzuki method starts really young. Like some kids start as young as 3 years old.
Oh, wow.
So, and so I started in the Suzuki method, but mm-hmm. And when I was almost 8, but actually that was a big motivation for me, because I was in the beginner class with all these, you know, 3-year-olds, and I was almost 8, and it really motivated me to practice to advance. So I advanced really quickly in the beginning.
So what was your hometown like? You grew up in Virginia, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. So, my parents, really spearheaded my musical education from an early age. My mom would drive us all to lessons all over the area. I mean, by the time I was in middle school, she was driving me to Baltimore, which is like an hour and a half each way for my violin lessons. I went to Peabody Prep for a few years in Baltimore, and they always had us enrolled in youth orchestra, in the youth orchestras of Prince William County. Mm-hmm. And we were also playing together as a family. We had a family ensemble, and we played in church a lot and in different events, that kind of thing. So they really like made sure we had opportunities to excel musically.
Yep. So, I have two young kids of my own, and I feel like a lot of our podcast listeners would be interested to know what's a good way to get young kids into music and into learning instruments.
Yeah. Well, actually I have a 1-year-old. We already enrolled him in a Kinder music program, which is really fun. The teacher is amazing, and she really interacts well with the kids and at his age, it's just, using shakers and but internalizing all these just basic musical concepts like rhythm and pitch and melody. I think just exposing kids to music, to really good music, and also showing your love of music, like to share what you love with mm-hmm. with them at a young age. At some point, like if you're going to be serious about an instrument, you have to really study it with a lot of discipline. So in the early ages, kids aren't naturally gonna practice. So that's actually what's so great about the Suzuki method, is it really gets the parents involved in the practicing, and it relies on that. So it's kind of like a triangle between the student and the teacher and the parent. Mm-hmm. I had a great experience in the Suzuki method for starting out. I think for the early years, it's really good.
Nice. So let's fast forward a little bit to your more advanced musical training. So what higher education institute did you go to first?
Yeah, so I mentioned Peabody Prep when I was in middle school. And then I think when I was around 16, so while I was in high school, I actually started going to study with a man named Aaron Rosand, who was a legendary violinist and teacher. And he taught at the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia, but I didn't go there yet. I studied with him privately in high school. So I was actually taking a train up to Connecticut from DC every other week or so, by myself a lot of times, to go take lessons.
Oh, wow.
And then I also went to quite a number of music festivals, the Aspen Music Festival, the Summit Music Festival, Masterworks Music Festival. So that those are summer things that I was doing. And then in college, I went to the Colburn Conservatory of Music, which is in Los Angeles, in downtown. And it's right across from Disney Hall, where the LA Phil plays. And that was a really, really formative experience, those 4 years. I studied with a really important, amazing teacher named Robert Lipset. And that's where I got a bachelor's degree in violin performance. And then after that, I moved back to the East Coast to study at the Curtis Institute of Music, which was always kind of my dream. At that point, I didn't really think I was going to go there, because it's generally for undergraduate students. But I went there as a post-grad grad student, I guess, to get an artist diploma. And I had amazing teachers there, Ida Kabafian and Arnold Steinhardt. That really I grew a lot musically in those years I was there. And then after that, I actually did one more artist diploma program in Cleveland at the Cleveland Institute of Music. And that was kind of my final year of studying that really helped me transition into the professional world. And at the end, or during that year, is when I won my audition for the Cleveland Orchestra Assistant Concertmaster position.
Okay. Can you kind of explain a little bit what the difference between like a bachelor's or a master's is and versus like an artist diploma?
Yeah. So bachelor's, I have a bachelor's degree and it's a bachelor of music, and it I guess it's more of like a official degree. Artist diploma is actually pretty common in the music world, and it's really designed to like fully focus on performance for people that want to go into a performing career. So it's not really a letter, like it's not a master's degree. It doesn't have that many academic requirements. Mm-hmm. So it's mostly just learning a lot of repertoire, playing in an orchestra, taking lessons. That's always probably the biggest part of music, like a instrumental education, is your private teacher. And I was also doing competitions and professional auditions at that point, and gigging a lot. I mean, playing professional orchestras. So it was kind of like a slow transition, but once I got the job in Cleveland Orchestra, that was like really like full on professional life, because that's really a lot different.
Yeah, I can imagine. Was it the assistant concert master position that brought you to Cleveland, or were you already here once you looked into that?
Yeah, so actually I was already in Cleveland. I was studying that year at the Cleveland Institute of Music, because I was planning on taking a couple more professional like section orchestral auditions, but both of my teachers at Curtis recommended that I go and study one more year at Cleveland. And it really, I mean, one of the biggest things about that year that I learned so much was just going to see the Cleveland Orchestra every single week, because they have an amazing student program where you can go for free every week. So I went and saw them sometimes more than once a week, and I learned so much that year, and that really helped when I took that audition. But yeah, I mean, that audition came up, and that's why we stayed in Cleveland, because actually at that point I had a job. I was concertmaster of the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia. So I was kind of going back and forth between Cleveland and Philadelphia. That's not a full-time thing, but it's just, I would go back whenever that group played. When I won the assistant concertmaster job, that's why we stayed in Cleveland, me and my wife, that is.
So what was that process like, getting into that position?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually really intense. Audition process to get into any professional orchestra is, you know, a monumental task. I actually auditioned two times for the Cleveland Orchestra on the third try is when I actually won the audition.
Oh, wow.
And so it was a lot of work, and you know, it can be discouraging at times, but I think that when I finally did get that position, it was really gratifying that like I had worked so hard, and I guess it finally paid off, it seemed like. But it also kind of somewhat seems like you just have to have a really good day. Mm-hmm. Everything has to go right. Yeah. Because there's a lot to it other than everything from like how you slept the night before, how you're feeling, it mm-hmm. all come goes into how you play.
So what are some of the responsibilities that you have as assistant concertmaster?
Yeah, so, well, our concertmaster position, our number one spot is vacant right now. So, but then we have two associate concertmasters and two assistants, which basically just kind of means we're ranked, like it's where we sit. And so my job is mostly to support my colleagues and be ready to step in at any moment if anybody calls in sick or isn't playing for any reason that week. So, and it happens pretty often that I'll jump up to first stand, like, and sit second chair, and that chair is playing second chair is kind of a unique role, because you have to really support the concertmaster, and but not, you don't want to get in the way physically, like moving too much, because the concertmaster is the one who leads the section with their body language. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of it is really just being prepared and being ready in case anything, in case you're the one that's going to be playing concertmaster. It's mm-hmm. I sometimes give the analogy, it's like, it's kind of like I'm like second or third string quarterback on a NFL team, except you're on the field the whole time. Sure. You're playing, but you're not actually playing as the quarterback, but you're ready to do it if you need to.
Yeah. All right. So let's switch gears and talk about January 16th. Do you want to kind of chat about the repertoire a little bit, maybe talk about what piece you're most excited about, what you feel is the most interesting piece in the program?
Sure. Yeah. So it's a great program. Miriam Burns is the conductor, and I've actually worked with her before. We actually played a concerto with her conducting at the Masterworks Festival mm-hmm. a couple of years ago. I went back as a guest artist and was a soloist, and she conducted. Mm-hmm. And I think your audience is probably must know her because she's conducting at Youngstown quite a bit. She's mm-hmm. wonderful, just really wonderful person and musician. And so she put this program together that so it starts out with the Bartok Romanian dances, which I love that piece. It's a fun, it's not that long, it's just five short pieces that really showcase the like folk music that Bartok kind of recorded and made his own. Mm-hmm. There's a solo violin arrangement, which is the original, which I've played quite a bit since I was pretty young. But what I'm there to do on January 16th is play the Brahms violin concerto. And that is one of my all-time favorite violin concertos. And I've been wanting to play this piece since high school. And it's just a monumental piece. It's one of the biggest, most important, hardest violin concertos in the repertoire. Mm-hmm. But it's beautiful and lyrical and genius, like structurally. It just from start to finish, you kind of get the sense it's one big structure, and that really makes sense. And I especially love the opening where the violin comes in. It's probably got to be the most epic entrance for a solo violin of all time.
Sure.
Because the orchestra just has this big long introduction. It gets more and more stormy, and then the solo violin comes in. And it has this beautiful slow movement that starts out with an amazing oboe solo, and then the violin solo takes it over, and then the third movement is this really joyous and kind of
happy ending to the piece and really fun. And but it has a little bit of everything in it. And I'm really, really excited to play it. I've been working on it for a really long time now. And I always am finding new things to discover in the piece. There's just so many beautiful moments. So yeah, that's what I'm doing, is the Brahms Violin Concerto. I'll be the soloist. And then the second half of the program is the Beethoven Seventh Symphony, which is, I mean, a masterpiece, one of the most famous pieces of classical music. The second movement, the slow movement, is especially well known. It's in a lot of movies, like it was in The King's Speech. That's what a lot of people know it from these days. Oh, but okay. I mean, this piece is really one of the greatest symphonies ever. I mean, it's really a fun, amazing piece. So it's going to be a great program.
Well, we're very excited to have you, and I'm excited for all of our guests and symphony goers to be able to, you know, hear you play this piece that you're so passionate about. And yeah, is there anything else that you want to plug or promote or anything like that before we go?
I mean, I guess if anybody is interested, they could check out my YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. I have quite a few performances up there. You can just search Stephen Tavani on YouTube, and you can find my videos. I made a couple different ones during COVID over the past, you know, year and a half. But there's, I mean, I have videos going back of like probably 8 or 9 years. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they could check out that. But other than that, I'm just really, really excited to come to Youngstown and play with the orchestra. And yeah, I hope everybody enjoys the concert.
Yeah, I'm sure that we will. And I will link your YouTube channel in the description of this episode so that everyone can easily find it. And I think that I did also see a concert that you did with Miriam Burns on there too. So
yeah, actually take a peek at that. Is on there. Yeah. It's not, that one is not that great of video quality, but it is on there.
All right. Well, everyone has been warned. Okay. Well, thank you, Stephen, so much for coming on and talking to us, and we'll see you on January 16th.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.